Are you sick of mansplaining?
We are too.
Now it's time for us to girlsplain.
Hi, everyone.
Hello and welcome to episode 4. How are you today, Allie?
I'm great, Jodie. How are you?
Good. Are you ready to girlsplain?
Let's girlsplain.
Let's get rid of mansplaining forever and only girlsplain.
Mm-hmm.
So intense. I love it.
Cool. The topic we're going to be talking about is body positivity. So in this episode, we're going to be talking about the body positivity movement.
Yeah.
The body positivity movement advocates for accepting and celebrating all body types, challenging narrow beauty standards, and promoting self-love.
Mm.
It's nothing like self-love. It emerged to combat body shaming and discrimination, emphasizing diversity and inclusivity. Social media plays a key role in amplifying the movement these days, yeah. But discussions about intersectionality within the movement exist, and we will be addressing them deeply.
And this is a really interesting movement. I think, obviously, we'll speak about the origins of, you know, where these ideologies come from, but I think this is a very interesting movement because it has very clear aims historically.
Mm.
It was founded on the basis of radical acceptance movements.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting to say the way that social media and also the interactions of capitalism and marketing and the way those have kind of skewed a movement that originally had really pure ideas.
Yeah.
So should we just get into it?
Yeah, we should. But should we acknowledge the fact that we both fit in, Allie and I fit into sort of conventionally attractive white women stereotypes?
Yeah.
And obviously with that comes bias.
Totally. And once again, it's, you know, easy for us to speak about research that we've read or, you know, maybe some of our own experiences. But it is so important that we also acknowledge a bias and also the privilege that we have being
conventionally attractive
white women.
Yeah. Completely. You know, that's pretty privilege and just privilege based on the color of our skin, which is.
Yeah. And I do think that is a, you know, and something we will speak about, but it's definitely a flaw of the body positivity movement in how it is shaped now. And so we just want to be really clear in acknowledging that bias and also welcoming the stories from people that may be listening to the podcast that may have, you know,
their own stories that they would feel comfortable in sharing. We'd love to amplify them. We'll do an extra episode and talk about them if any of those stories get submitted. We don't want to just have this being a one-sided conversation from two white people.
Absolutely. I think we also have so much to learn about this topic still. And
we can only provide you what we've experienced and what we can read and research. But we will do our best to be as intersectional as we can.
Yeah.
And
to
analysis.
Give justice to the experiences of marginalized women. So let's get into it.
Let's girlsplain.
So body positivity is obviously a buzzword that is really used in the media and has kind of become synonymous with the idea of self-love. But it has a history of radical social justice and body acceptance entrenched in its origins. So the movement actually originated with the fat acceptance movement of the 1960s, which was created by and for people in marginalized bodies, particularly with an emphasis on fat, black, queer, and disabled bodies. Social justice is really crucial to its history. The formation of this movement also led to the founding of a nonprofit organization in the US called the National Association to Advance Fat Acceptance, which is an organization that fights against societal anti-fat bias, fat phobia, and systemic fat oppression. With the creation of social media in the mid to late 2000s, the movement really took on a new life, according to fat acceptance advocate Stephanie Yeboah. I really hope that's how you say her name. Please correct me if I'm wrong. This movement was originally led by predominantly larger plus size black women and was meant to be a space for these women of color to talk about their identities and the way that the way they looked impacted how they were treated.
From about 2012 onwards, influencer culture began to influence the movement with body positive hashtags gaining prominence. Plus size influencers were not only the ones to preach acceptance and love for their body, thinner creators followed suit. A movement that was initially created to promote radical acceptance of marginalized bodies became a movement of generally promoting self-love and came very much into the mainstream.
Mm.
What would you say the key principles of the movement are, Allie?
The Butterfly Foundation, which is an organization here in Australia that aims to combat eating disorders and negative body image culture, identifies the key principles of the body positive movement today being greater acceptance, inclusivity, connectedness, diversity, and positivity with regards to appearance, body shape, weight, and size. But I think it is important to acknowledge the fact that obviously those are really important principles, and I think that they hold a lot of value, but they aren't necessarily the original
purpose of the movement.
Yeah, the original purpose of the movement was radical acceptance of all bodies, specifically marginalized bodies.
Mm.
And, you know, this is something we'll talk about in the episode, but these conversations about self-love are so important, and I don't want to discount them because I do think there is so much space for them. But I think this is where the, you know, body positivity movement has received a lot of critique, in that today's movement doesn't necessarily hold space for the people that it was originally created for.
And I think this is one of those issues where it's completely fine for a movement that targeted a specific section of people to become mainstream, but the importance is that it's not losing what it was initially aimed to do.
Mm.
It's not body positivity in its traditional form if it's just for people with a certain skin color,
totally,
or that look a certain way. I mean, I think body positivity a lot of the time, from what I can see on social media, is white people who honestly seem to fit the mold of a conventionally attractive looking person.
Well, I think it's interesting because today's body positive movement has become very like flaw centric, or what people deem as flaws. Mm. You know, it's about accepting, you know, hip dips or cellulite or, you
your
know,
nose.
Yeah, which are important things.
Yeah.
It is an incredibly important sentiment for sure. But it is interesting because when you look at, you know, key influential figures in the media, at least those that are identified now as being influential figures, right? Someone like Ashley Graham, who is incredible, and I do love what she stands for, but she's a very conventionally attractive woman.
Yeah.
And so it's complicated in her being a voice for a whole movement when, much like us, she still would experience pretty privilege.
Yeah.
You know?
Agreed.
Her career is a model. And it's brilliant that we have a space for, you know, what society deems as plus size models. I know there's a lot of intricacies in the dialogue as well in this, you know, movement.
Mm.
But of course, she is a model, which means she is still conventionally attractive.
Yeah. So why is there a need for body positivity? Mm. I think is a good place to sort of start.
Yeah.
So I think body positivity is really important. I think in a society that is really driven by media,
yeah,
and sort of creates expectations for women to look a certain way, body positivity is really important.
Yeah.
But I would like to say that I think body positivity really should be positivity around being the healthiest version of yourself, about accepting the way you look and accepting and loving, you know, how you outwardly manifest yourself by your appearance. Mm. And I think that's really important.
Mm. Yeah, I think, you know, over the various episodes of this podcast, we've spoken a lot about the expectations that are placed on women, which are really quite insurmountable expectations.
Yeah. And a lot of them are appearance-based.
A lot of them are appearance-based. And we're a society that is so driven by aesthetics.
Mm.
You know, you look at something like the Victoria's Secret fashion show, which was, at its time, it was like a national holiday.
I seriously remember sitting on the floor in like 2011.
Absolutely.
In front of the TV, glued to it,
absolutely,
watching Miranda Kerr and Candace and everyone under the sun, almost exact replicas of each other, walking up and down that runway and thinking, oh my goodness.
And something that is so fascinating to me too is, even in the tail end of the, you know, and I know they've also reworked the concept of the fashion show now to try and be more inclusive, which I'm sure there has been a lot of discourse about, because it's a brand that is so founded on promoting a specific body.
Actually, you'll be interested to know Victoria's Secret started out as a men's lingerie store.
Wow, didn't know that. That's hilarious.
Fun fact.
Why is it called Victoria's? That's a conversation for another day. Yeah. I would love to know more about that. But I remember, like, in the tail end of you know, the big show, when they hired Barbara Pulvin, But she was considered a plus size model because she was a size, like she would be probably an Australian 10.
Maybe a 12. But like she
I feel like I'm a 10.
She's
smaller than me.
She was by no means a plus size or curvy. Yeah. She was curvy. She had more curves. She wasn't, you know, straight up and down, stick thin.
Yeah.
But in their mind, that was a body positive model.
That's quite confronting.
And then, you know, you compare that to, you know, Rihanna's like Fenty Savage shows, which are all about promoting inclusivity.
Mm. Even Skims.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do think, you know, in the last few years, again, we've come a long way, but that doesn't mean that there's not so much further to go. And we'll discuss a little bit more about the intricacies of when, you know, marketing gets involved with a movement like this and it becomes a, you know,
something that it's not.
Yeah.
Do you think that the traditional stereotypes of female bodies has impacted you?
Absolutely. I have a very, again, you know, I want to acknowledge the fact that in a lot of ways I am very much a conventionally attractive body type, but I am plagued by this idea of, it's something I really felt in high school too, that I am too curvy to be thin, but too thin to be curvy. Because I feel like I don't, my body type, I'm Greek, I have, you know, slightly bigger thighs, slightly bigger butt, but I'm not curvy to fit in the category of someone who is curvy. Like you think someone like Summer Rae, like an Instagram model, you know, but then I'm also not stick thin. And that was something that, it's still something that I struggle with a lot, of feeling like I don't fit one particular image that is considered attractive.
And I think for you, that's probably even more of a concern because you are in the modeling field.
Yeah. I mean, my whole job is based on the way I look. And so it's very easy also to notice when things change. And, you know, as women, our body does fluctuate as well.
Mm.
And when I'm looking at my body under the microscope that I do, because so much of my job revolves around what I wear and how I look, it's so easy to see small changes and have those so detrimentally impact the way that I view myself, you know, and like body image issues are something that affects so many different people.
Men and women.
Men and women of all body types.
Yeah.
And I think that is at least one key takeaway, you know, from this movement, is that it's trying to foster a sense of inclusivity, but also of self-love. You know, self-love is obviously a really important principle.
I think so too. But I do think that part of it has been sort of corrupted by this sort of self-love idea. Mm. I think one thing that I was really obsessed with last year was the That Girl trend.
Mm.
And I think that is about self-acceptance and self-love. But to be body positive, you don't need a pretty glass to put your coffee in, and you don't need to wear Lululemon, and you don't need to do all of these certain things or look a certain way to love yourself.
Well, it's almost like, again, another aesthetically driven expectation put on women, just in a different context.
Yeah.
And in that sense, you know, what if you can't afford the $300 activewear set that someone's wearing?
Does that mean you can't be body positive or prioritize your health?
Mm.
No. Mm. But for some reason, we're like conditioned to think that.
Mm.
I think the need for body positivity is particularly important for younger girls.
Yeah.
I think in high school, it's a particularly important thing going through puberty for a woman it's an incredibly intense time because your body is changing and you're looking a different way, but you still have, you know, the media and things and other people telling you how you should look. I think for me, my most difficult experience with being positive about my body was definitely in the early years of high school. Mm. I think a lot of my friends were struggling with, you know, their own body image and perhaps eating disorders and things like that. And the impact is sort of far-reaching of these negative body images. If someone else is experiencing them, there's a good chance it will sort of rub off on you.
Mm.
So I think addressing these sort of ideas of what it means to be beautiful is wonderful, but it has to happen at a really early age to make sure that we're not conditioned into believing we need to look a certain way and then believing that for the rest of our lives.
Totally.
Yes. And I think also it's really important too at an early, like, foundational level that there is an understanding and celebration of the fact that all bodies are different and that there are some things that we also cannot change about our body.
Mm.
Because I think that can also lead to a lot of body image and dysmorphic views.
Yeah.
When your body might work differently to another person's and therefore look a different way.
Yeah.
And then that's, you know, especially important when we look at the intersectionality of the movement and what it means for disabled women, because there are a lot of elements of the way our body works that we don't have any control over.
Yeah. And whether that is something that is, you know, a disability.
Mm.
And how that limits your ability to interact with the world and the way you look, or whether that's something as simple as having genetic characteristics based on your culture.
Yeah.
These are all really important things and are inherently going to change the way you look and the way you grow in the world.
Yes, for sure.
I have childbearing hips, always have since very early on through puberty. And that was something that my friends thought meant I was fat.
Mm.
And I couldn't have a thigh gap because I had childbearing hips, but that was something everyone was obsessed with.
Yeah.
But it just didn't come naturally to me. And so my first thought wasn't, oh, genetically, I have hips that work a certain way.
Mm.
It was, I can't get a thigh gap.
Yeah.
I'm fat.
Yeah. Yeah.
I better not have any more Nutella toast. It was just never explained to me that we were different. And I think, you know, I went to a all-girls private school, very privileged, but everyone did look a certain way. Upper middle class, we all were conditioned to look a certain way and act a certain way and dress a certain way.
Yep.
And so any difference that deviated from that just kind of wasn't something I was exposed to.
Yeah, for sure.
So I think exposure to different people and different body types early on is super important.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Should we talk about some misconceptions of the body positive movement? I think this is something that I personally... sort of subscribe to at some point. So there are misconceptions about what the body positivity movement means. There are arguments that body positivity promotes obesity. I'm here to shut those down. I'm here to say that if body positivity is truly body positivity, it is body inclusivity, which means being inclusive of different kinds of bodies.
Yeah.
But it also means taking steps to be the healthiest version of yourself, not the healthiest person, but the healthiest version of yourself, taking into account your body, your conditions, the way you interact with the world. My healthy isn't peak performance.
Yeah.
It's just being healthy. And whatever that looks like for me is going to be very different to someone else.
Totally.
And I think one thing to note there is I have an incredible metabolism. I could, and very much did, eat a pint of ice cream yesterday, and that's never going to show up on me. But that's not healthy.
Yeah.
And glorifying those kind of behaviors is not healthy, and that's not what the body positivity movement is about. It's not about just going, oh, I'm going to eat all the pizza. It's about balance, and it should be, if it really is body positivity, about being healthy for you. But it doesn't have to be this, like, that girl idea. It doesn't have to be that.
You know, on the flip side of that, right, which not a lot of people know this, I don't speak about it super often, but I'm someone that experiences a chronic illness. And so my healthy version of myself has limitations to it because I cannot put my body through the same amount of exercise that someone else may be able to.
Mm.
So for me, my healthiest is when I'm being gentle on my body. And, you know, exercise is really important and it makes me feel good. But, and, you know, I think also when you look at, like, disordered exercise behaviors too, being the person that runs the fastest and for the longest isn't achievable for every person.
And it's also not what you should be striving for.
No, no. It's...
unless that's what you want to do, but... that's totally what you have to do.
If it's a goal of, you know, if it's a personal goal of running fast or, you know, whatever that may be, but if it's driven by wanting your body to look a certain way,
that's not what the movement's about.
That's not what the movement's about, for sure. Because there is, I think, a level of, you know, the health world also has a lot of toxic ideologies.
Traits and behaviors. Yeah, totally. Completely.
That it can be pretty easy to subscribe to if you do care about, you know, exercise or certain things, and it's hard to distinguish between what is right for your body versus what's right for someone else.
I agree. And so I think as long as body positivity is rooted in trying to be the healthiest version of yourself, and not when I say the healthiest, I, as I said before, I don't mean peak performance, but I just mean having balance. You know,
totally.
It's not healthy for me to eat a pint of ice cream.
Yeah.
I acknowledge that, but it's also not something I do every day.
Yeah.
And so having a pint of ice cream once is not something to threat over.
Totally.
But it's also something that I shouldn't be encouraging myself to do every day or every 2 times a day if it's really stressful, but that's fine.
Yeah, for sure.
The December 2019 edition of the International Journal of Environmental Research and Public Health featured a study revealing a strong correlation between body dissatisfaction, depression, the utilization of performance-enhancing substances, and low self-esteem. So accepting your body and being positive about it is really important.
Totally.
As stated by the Office on Women's Health, which is a US-based office, a positive body image involves experiencing satisfaction with one's appearance and feeling at ease in one's body. Conversely, the office notes that harboring a negative body image can elevate the likelihood of mental health issues such as eating disorders. And I think one thing that is important is it's great to be positive about your body. And I know I've said as long as it's healthy a lot of the time. But it's ensuring that we're not being positive when negative things have happened.
Yeah, totally.
Like if you have an eating disorder, you should be positive about the way you look, but not in a way that continues to foster those behaviors.
Totally, totally.
And same with an overeating disorder. You should still love the way you look, but address the issues.
Yeah, totally.
I think is important.
Totally. Another critique of the movement that I think also links to these ideas in a sense is the idea of performative activism, and also the way that brands and marketing and capitalism as a concept has influenced the body positivity movement and also interacted with it. And then what that also has meant for people, you know, and how they actually view their bodies.
Yeah.
So this idea of, you know, commodified body positivity by brands, it's become a marketing tactic. And this is a version of body positivity that actually doesn't work.
It's not positive.
It's not positive. It's, you know, on one level, tokenistic, you know, for sure. Again, that Victoria's Secret runway, she also wasn't a, you know, a plus-sized, for lack of a better term,
yeah, it
model.
Was the most inclusive thing they could get without being inclusive.
Yeah, but I think a lot of people also feel disillusioned by the idea of seeing a curvier person on their, you know, on an advertisement and feeling like that was done to tick a box, not because the brand is actually being body positive or inclusive. They're doing it to satisfy a need that they think will actually make them money.
Yeah.
And then it's made the movement become very surface level, right? You know, it's this mainstream rise of the concept of body positivity, but it's not breaking down the issues.
Yeah, it's like we were talking about last week in our Women in the Workplace episode. It's the systemic issues that are the problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if they're not addressed, the later problems aren't going to be addressed either.
Totally. Body positivity is probably at its peak right now in terms of how often it's talked about and the way that brands are integrating it into their marketing tactics. And yet we have this Ozempic craze.
Yeah.
At the same time, you know? And so it's like how the way that the movement is being used at the moment, how successful is that really being?
Yeah. Just to clarify, the Ozempic craze, the Ozempic craze, if you haven't heard about it, is basically, I think it's a diabetes medication.
Yeah, it's insulin medication.
It's basically an insulin medication, which one of the side effects is suppressed hunger. So people are using it as a weight loss means.
Celebrities, for example.
Yeah.
You know, that's very kind of commonly how it's become mainstream.
But I mean, doctors are prescribing it sort of left, right, and center for weight loss, to the point that people who had diabetes, who have diabetes, couldn't access their genuine medication. I guess one thing though is, even though some of these marketing tactics, and this is like completely from my head, are virtue signaling. Mm. And they are tokenistic and they aren't addressing the systemic issue. Do you think having those ads are better than not having the ads?
I do think so. Yeah. It's a very, like, it's a very double-edged sword, because the more inclusive messaging that we're seeing in marketing, whether its intentions are right or not, does foster more inclusive behaviors and, you know, a more inclusive mindset. But it's almost like what happened with Pride, right? Mm. And how Pride became a marketing tactic. Strategy. And then it does, it almost loses some of its meaning to a certain extent, because then people become disillusioned by the fact that, oh, it's a marketing tactic.
Yeah, that's true.
And so it is, it's absolutely important. We need to be seeing all kinds of bodies, male and female, all sizes, all ethnicities, all, you know, abled and disabled bodies.
Mm.
But I do think it's important that
the systemic issues are addressed as well.
Exactly.
As these things are put on show. I agree.
Yeah. I read a study from the International Journal of Eating Disorders that discussed eating disorders within the time of COVID, right? Which is a time where we weren't out in the world. We were consuming media almost entirely digitally.
Mm.
And this study indicated that eating disorders were more prevalent during the pandemic.
That does not surprise me, to be honest.
Yeah.
Seeing all that media and consuming it.
Exactly.
I mean, and also there was the whole idea that there was no other outlet for a lot of people during COVID.
Totally.
So obviously, attentions were focused on things that they could see. Yep. But
yeah.
It's disappointing.
Yeah, for sure. And then I think the other, of course, important critique of this movement is the intersectionality of it and the now lack of representation of ethnic minority women and disabled women, which is essentially, you know, erasure from a movement that was designed to champion them.
Mm. Yeah. One study I read, hashtag body positive, a critical exploration of the body positive movement within physical cultures, taking an intersectionality approach by Griffin et al. Feminist activists and critical sports scholars globally advocate for inclusive representation and accessibility in physical cultures. The contested concept of body positive, which is viewed by some as liberating from patriarchal norms, has been criticized for sort of gentrifying almost an idea that was originally rooted in black feminist thought.
Yeah.
And it's sort of now white-centric and politicized. And the findings of that study just show that now hashtags and posts relating to hashtag body positivity and hashtag body positive actually have a lack of diverse representations. Mm. The findings highlight that the dominance of lean, white, cisgendered bodybuilding individuals with a notable absence of BIPOC and LGBTQAI plus that fat, thick, curvy, or older people, or gender non-conforming people, or disabled bodies are no longer really represented.
Yeah.
Which is rough, because how often does this happen of white people co-opting ideas that were originally made to foster inclusivity for marginalized people? It happens all the time.
Yeah. And I think, you know, and again, of course, as we've mentioned so many times, you know, self-love is an important notion.
Yeah.
But the notion of self-love and embracing elements of your body that you feel bad about has been equated to acceptance of marginalized bodies, when they are in reality quite different things.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Because the being in a marginalized body, being, you know, a person of color or someone that is disabled,
which we completely don't understand.
Yeah, but that, you know, that directly impacts the way that those people are treated.
Yeah, and the way that they experience the world.
Mm.
Saying things like self-love is body positivity is not correct.
Mm.
Not in the sense of this movie.
Exactly.
Just because we have self-love and we have more acceptance does not mean that marginalized bodies or, you know, people of color, people with disabilities are now experiencing the world differently.
Yeah.
The whole message has been lost, sort of, really.
For sure.
Now, and it's super great that we have this sense of self-love.
Mm.
But the people who this movement was originally built to support are no longer being supported. And so that's why we're here, girlsplaining this and sort of bringing light to this topic. If it is not positivity and inclusivity in a way that is inclusive of all body types, all conditions, all colors, cultures, abilities, disabilities, then it's not actually body positive.
Mm, for sure.
Embracing your nose or the freckle that you dislike is really, really important. But just because you can do that doesn't mean other people who are in further marginalized bodies have self-acceptance and are loved and feel loved and supported from a mainstream culture. I think that's the really important thing.
Totally. And this movement won't.
I feel like people view the body positivity movement as something that's been really successful in creating change and improving representation.
Until people in marginalized bodies are feeling that same acceptance, it's actually not body positivity because we still have undercurrents of racism.
Yeah.
We still have undercurrents of fat phobia, which is particularly painful if you're also in a marginalized body. Those intersections cross and add additional levels of oppression. You know, we still have a society that is predicated upon individuals who are not experiencing disabilities navigating through them. So all these other systemic issues are going to continue to contribute to marginalization of different bodies. So those are the things that we really need to look at and address, which our podcast is trying to do.
And again, if there are people in the community that have stories that they think would be relevant, please reach out to us because we want this platform to be somewhere where we can voice your concerns and your stories as well.
Completely. And if you want to come on and talk about these experiences, please let us know and we can set something up because we have experienced, obviously, body image issues and feelings that we can't be, you know, always body positive. We can't always self-love, but we haven't experienced these multiple intersections. And honestly, we never will.
Yeah.
So we'd like to amplify any stories that anyone feels like they'd like to share. Ali, you mentioned earlier there's the body neutrality movement. Do you want to give me a little girlsplain of that? Girlsplain me a little bit?
Yeah. So the body neutrality movement arose as a counter argument to body positivity. The term was first popularized by author Anne Poirot. She wrote a book called The Body Joyful. And the premise of the movement was it was designed to be a safe place to escape body hatred without the pressure that you must love every inch of yourself at all times. So it kind of counteracts the elements of toxic positivity that have emerged in the body positive movement and intends to break down those layers of social conditioning that tell us that our body determines our worth.
That seems really valuable as long as it's including marginalized bodies.
Totally. Yeah. So the focus of the movement, and again, I think this also has been critiqued for the fact that it doesn't work with marginalized bodies because it doesn't necessarily, at least on some levels, factor in systemic oppression. But I do think the root idea of the movement, which is focusing on what your body can do for you and its function and the fact that it's, you know, a body, and for me, you know, focusing on what your body does for you, you know, and rather than knowing that you may not love every inch of it all the time, but being grateful for the fact that
it is what it is.
It is exactly. It's functioning. It's keeping you alive. You have lungs that are helping you breathe. You have a heart that's pumping blood through your body. And I definitely think that does, in some senses, resolve some of the toxic positive elements of body positivity. Because also it, you know, takes into account that you may not love your body all the time. And that is not a bad thing either. It's a human feeling, you know?
I think one thing, though, that movement doesn't take into account is sometimes the issues with being positive about your body are not actually your own issues.
Yeah.
They're issues that other people are projecting onto you.
Totally.
And onto you based on the way that you look.
Yeah. For sure. Again, I think it's also not as fleshed out as a concept as the body positive movement either. But I think in, you know, all these instances, what's useful for us is that we can learn things from them, right? And, you know, you learn the positives, but also leave behind the things that aren't working.
I agree. So some key takeaways from each movement, I think there's a few things we can do. And I think one thing is where it's inclusivity in fashion and beauty industries, where it is tokenistic and where sort of things are put forward and body images are put forward in a tokenistic way. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's not ideal. But also, I think there is value in buying into things and supporting brands that, I guess, even if it is tokenistic, are intersectional and are inclusive of all body types. You know, buying from companies that have adaptive ranges is really important, because supporting those ranges are really important and ensuring that brands know that these are the kind of things that people want to see for good reasons is really important.
I will actually call out on that note that Tommy Hilfiger has a really brilliant adaptive range. I worked with them on their campaign for that movement, and they wanted to bring in perspectives of women that experience a varying level of, you know, disabled bodies and also chronic illnesses. And again, you know, I have a mostly able body. I do have a chronic illness, which does affect me in a lot of ways, but I appreciated that they wanted to understand a variety of perspectives.
Yeah.
Not just one. They didn't want to just represent one person in
that. That's important.
Yeah.
I think, and I mean, adaptive fashion, one thing I do see with that, which is fashion that's built for differently abled bodies, is really there's no reason why all fashion just shouldn't be that way.
Totally.
Like, I don't understand why we don't have adaptive things for everyone. Yeah. It's not, I mean, having something that's easier to use is no negative for
sure.
Anyone.
For sure.
And it also supports brands that do things like that.
I think also an important takeaway from all of these movements is challenging traditional beauty standards and what they mean and the way that we determine our value based on, you know, these unrealistic and harmful expectations that are placed on women's bodies and men as well. I think that is a really important thing to note, that body image issues affects everyone, no matter how you look, no matter what gender you are.
Agreed.
I definitely think, you know, there's an emphasis in the media placed on women's body image in particular, but something that we should definitely note. But by questioning and reshaping beauty standards, we will create an inclusive and more tolerant environment, and we can do our best to reduce the impact of harmful beauty ideals.
And there's nothing wrong with wearing makeup or dressing up or doing anything like that, as long as you're doing it for yourself.
Totally.
And for the right reason.
Totally.
If you're doing it because you feel like you're expected to look a certain way, or you think other people will treat you in a different way, maybe just question the motive behind your movements. And am I not eating this banana because I don't want people to think I'm fat? Like, I know that's a very basic thing, but, you know, sometimes I'll limit what I eat based on how I think it will make me look.
Totally.
Based on how I think it will make other people perceive me. And I don't think I'd be alone in doing that.
Yeah. Even looking at, you know, like the sizing of clothes that we wear, right? I think one of my favorite takeaways from, you know, body positive creators is the idea that, you know, clothes are made to fit us, we're not made to fit the clothes. And I do think that that is a really important thing to keep in mind, because clothing and makeup are a form of self-expression and a way that we express our identity. They shouldn't be a way of shaping ourselves to conform to unrealistic expectations.
That's true. And an 8-in-1 brand is not an 8-in-another brand.
Oh my goodness. Just a little note on that. The sizing at Zara is so ridiculous. Like, so insane. The levels of, like...
Some days I'll be an extra small and some days I'll be extra large.
It makes no sense. And that is also important, I think, when we look at inclusive brands, sizing that feels inclusive.
And I think finally, just maybe one final takeaway is, if you see body shaming, condemn it, whether that's online or in the media or in interpersonal interactions. We all need to do our job, especially as white women. I think we have a specific job to do in advocating for a culture of respect and kindness for all body types, not just white women. We are in a place of privilege. We do have the ability to call these things out and address them. And that's not just for girls. Yeah. Calling out harmful male stereotypes as well. Like, if he doesn't have a six pack, he can still be attractive.
Yep.
Like, we don't need Kens running around. We need genuine people and people that look all different. shapes and sizes, which I think is important to just emphasize just online and in everyday conversations. You know, saying things like, oh my God, you've lost weight. It's actually not a compliment and it shouldn't be.
Yeah.
So just saying things like that really do add to those sort of harmful stereotypes. So maybe
I've also
complimenting
seen
people on things like their personality.
Yeah, I think that that is really important too, that we shift the idea of complimenting people based on the way that they look, because even sometimes things that are meant to be a compliment, like I've read a lot of articles and also seen a lot of discourse on social media about the fact that describing someone as healthy, although you might mean it as a compliment, can actually be really challenging for someone that has disordered body image issues because they don't necessarily view healthy as a good thing.
Yeah. And finally, let's give you some resources for where you can seek help. I mean, body image issues are absolutely prevalent in our society. We're sort of plagued with this idea of beauty standards, and until that's removed and these systemic issues are addressed, body image issues are going to continue to be prevalent. So one resource for eating disorders or disordered eating in Australia is the Butterfly Foundation. That is the national charity for Australians impacted by eating disorders, body image issues, and for family, friends, and communities who support them. That's particularly important because body image issues don't just affect the person who are experiencing them. It's the flow-on effect. In Australia, the helpline is 1-800-ED-HOPE or 1-800-334-673 or butterfly.org.au. They will provide you confidential support and also referrals to professionals you can see to have those issues discussed.
There is also the National Eating Disorder Collaboration, which is a great resource for up-to-date information and research on eating disorders. I also think this is really valuable. They provide a list of state-by-state treatments for inpatient, outpatient, and community support programs for people experiencing an eating disorder. So for access to those resources, you can head to www.nedc.com.au.
And I'm sure for our international listeners, there's, you know, places you can seek help for disordered eating or body image issues in your own countries. I'm sorry that we can't have a list because now we have so many listeners. It's really hard to do that. But I think also one thing that you can do that's easier is go onto social media and start following people who have a body type that's similar to you and who have body types that are completely different from yours, different colors, different abilities, because exposing yourself to different body types, I think, is very important and will allow us to continue to foster a culture of genuine acceptance, radical acceptance of all bodies.
Totally.
And keep listening to Girlsplain Pod, where we'll talk about these issues. And if you do have any stories about a body type that differs from ours, please feel free to write in and we can amplify those stories.
Yeah, you can find us on www.girlsplainpod.com or on social media. We are at girlsplainpod on TikTok and Instagram.
If you'd like to listen somewhere else or leave us a review or a rating, we are on Apple Podcast, Amazon Music, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen. I'm Jodie.
I'm Allie.
And you just got girlsplained.